This is young Dr. Mike Roizen, and I've got to say thank you to Sonar for great engineering as we go into podcast 813. Our guest for this podcast, Brett Finley, co-author of Let Them Eat Dirt. This is a great book, Saving Your Child from an Over-Sanitized World. But it, despite how great it is, isn't the highlight today. The highlight today, the top 10 innovations from the Cleveland Clinic that will change, that right, they'll be breakthrough game changers for healthcare in 2017. You'd be surprised what the most surprising one is, but I'll come back to that in a second. The guest again, Brett Finley, co-author, Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Over-Sanitized World. At 8:12, we had Joan Mancuso for Share. She talked to us about metastatic breast cancer awareness, how common it was, and where you can get help for it. Susan Gray, A Life Everlasting, The Extraordinary Story of One Boy's Gift to Medical Science, was our guest for podcast 810. For 811, who was our guest? Well, it was, if you will, Breaking the Trance, A Practical Guide for Parenting the Screen Dependent Child, with George Lynn and Cynthia Johnson. My favorite of the recent past, 808, which was Your Thyroid, with New York Times bestselling author Amy Myers. Now, all of these have been wonderful, so I shouldn't say my favorite, because they've all been outstanding. What I want to do today is really run through the top 10 medical innovations. How are these chosen? 160 physicians from the Cleveland Clinic are interviewed individually to give what they think will change care in the next year. Wasn't the major innovation, which will help you 5 or 10 years in the future. It is what is going to come down next year that is going to change your risk of care or your benefit of care. You'll see where one of them, in fact, number one, I should tell you, wasn't the first one on the list, but it was one of those, smart cars that reduced accidents and injuries. That's right. We're developing smart cars, things that show you backup or warnings that stop automatically. You know, that bus accident in Palm Springs that killed 13, injured 37? If that bus had been retrofitted with the smart devices, wouldn't have happened. And that's what these physicians, the 160, 20 venture capitalists, 20 basic scientists, they voted. They not only gave their suggestions, but then their double runoff, 20 of those physicians are chosen in two separate sets. 40 physicians vote on what they, out of the list of 500, what they think the top 10 will be for next year. And out of that 25 or 40 list that those top two groups choose, then they go in triple and quadruple illumination to get the top 10. And one of those was the re-engineering of cars to make them safer. Why will it change care? They think it'll reduce accidents in the next year that are injuries by between 50% and 70%. In America, between 30 and 50% worldwide, 1.4 million injury auto accidents reduce substantially, will reduce need for hospitalization, will reduce need for, if you will, really serious injuries of these people, and also reduces the availability of organs for transplant. All of these things will be caused by that. But in fact, a lot of the top 10, I'm going to run through them real quickly, and we'll go in back order. So we'll start at number 10. Number 10, bioabsorbable stents. Every year, 600,000 people have metal coronary stents, stents put into their chest to treat heart attacks or coronary artery blockage. Most of the time, that stent stays there forever, long after its mission is complete, and it may inhibit natural blood flow, cause other complications, make it more difficult for the next time you need operation or stent on that artery, and let you have drugs. So these stents are reabsorbed, their natural absorption, just like sutures are after 2 years. So you get rid of it, no more complications, no more need for the drug. Number 9, self-test for HPV. in the mountains of Ecuador, in the rough terrain of Tanzania, even in rural communities in the U.S., there are many women at significant risk of dying of cervical cancer. We know the most dangerous HPV viruses, that is, human papillomavirus, which contains 99% of the cases of cervical cancer, more than 50% of the cases of oral and throat cancer. And if you have one of those strains and haven't gotten the vaccine, that's right, the vaccines are against those dangerous strains. If you get one of those strains, then you should get more intense observation and therapy. And that's what these self-administered HPV tests available now and this next year. Augmented reality for surgery is number 8. You've heard of Pokemon. That's right. Pokemon is augmented reality. Well, imagine you being able to look at a tumor, look at the skin, look at the brain, look in the eye, and see the differences between tumor tissue and non-tumor tissue because of this augmented reality. Well, just like it's a reality for Pokemon, it's now a reality in the operating room, and it will spread like wildfire, our surgeons predict, at the Cleveland Clinic, and change medical care remarkably in the next year, making it better. Ketamine for treatment-resistant depression. A loss of hope is the classic symptom of depression. Drug and therapies have developed that help balance the neurotransmitters. But for 1/3 of depressed patients, the medications don't work. Alternatives have been electroconvulsive therapy in the past. But now, ketamine, a drug that was used in anesthesia, is now found to actually help maybe as many as 40% of these people not have treatment-resistant depression, not need electroconvulsive therapy or try it, but actually get better. Fast healthcare interoperative resources. Another thing mentioned by Vice President Joe Biden at the Cleveland Clinic Innovation Summit this past month. And what did he say? His son, the way they got the images from Philadelphia down to MD Anderson was they took a picture of them with the smartphone and emailed them or texted them down. But this changes everything. Fast healthcare interoperability will be a reality this year, and all medical records should be able to connect, all images connect seamlessly with security. That's FHIR, Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources, number 6 on the list. Number 5, you've heard about it, the automated car safety features, which decrease, that's right, 38,000 fatal car crashes in the U.S. alone, $23 billion cost. It'll be going down, saving us money on our insurance policies, saving hospitalizations, decreasing the need for rehabilitation facilities, and, as a side event, decreasing the availability of organs for transplant. How will we make that up? Well, we're now beginning to grow organs in tissue culture. Not quite fast enough for this technology, but it will save lives overall, a great number of lives. If you heard number 812 on podcast, I talked about liquid biopsies to find circulating tumor DNA so breast cancer could be diagnosed earlier and we have less metastatic, and breast cancer and other cancers that become metastatic can be treated earlier to prevent their recurrences from growing in as many metastases. That's due to liquid biopsies because cell-free circulating tumor DNA is shed from a tumor in the bloodstream and is 100 times more abundant than tumor cells are, making difficult biopsies not needed and making it easier and quicker to diagnose. Number 3, again, I mentioned in that podcast 812, is cellular immunotherapy to treat leukemia, lymphomas, and other cancers. This is called, if you will, the ctDNA or CART, C-A-R-T therapy, and it is you take your immune cells, your T cells, you get them hyped up so they attack the cancers specifically. You give them ability to attack the specific tumor therapy, the specific tumor antigen, and amazing, people who were all hope was left, you give them this, and it wipes out their tumor incredibly. Number two, diabetes drugs that reduce cardiovascular death. We've now got two drugs that have been shown in the last year, not just to decrease blood glucose levels, but to decrease the endpoint of cardiovascular disease and death. And number one, we're going to hear about in a weird and wonderful way in the next little bit. It is using the microbiome. That is all those bacteria in and on you. You're outnumbered by a thousandfold by the bacteria inside you and on you, and this is called your microbiome. It's being used to prevent, diagnose, and treat disease, and it fits with our author this week. It was the number one thing that will change care in the next year, and of course, the scientists, the experts at the Cleveland Clinic believe this is the year the microbiome cements itself as healthcare industry's most promising and even its most lucrative frontier for pharmaceutical companies, so you'll change the way you're diagnosed. That's right, the bacteria change in your gut when you get responses to, for example, cancer treatment. And those responses will be able to be diagnosed and predicted by the way your microbiome changes. Even heart disease and stroke, when you're getting resolution of it rather than increases of it. We're going to talk with Brent Finley in a little bit about letting them eat dirt, saving your child from an over-sanitized world, but it is the number one thing. What else was in the news this week? Well, I've got 6 minutes to tell you quickly what was in the news. The Wellness Foreplay, the 8 health habits experts say you need in your 20s. What was the most important one? It's learning to cook. That's right, learning to cook while cutting back on sugar, eating veggies, and practice portion control was the most important, if you will, health habit you should pick up in your 20s. New studies suggest the benefit of 10 minutes of walking after a meal for type 2 diabetes. That's right, this was really interesting because what it said was, in fact, that 10 minutes of walking. It used to be people would walk after meals. Well, that's what everyone should do, because 10 minutes of walking after a meal seems to, in fact, decrease your blood sugar and decrease your risk for type 2 diabetes and your risk of complications, more importantly than anything we can do. Number three, death rates from breast cancer declining. And not only is this great news that they're declining, but they're declining in all ethnic groups. They weren't before in the minority groups, but they are now. A benefit to both faster diagnosis and treatment, benefit to, believe it or not, the Affordable Care Act is credited with this one, because it makes care available to people and preventive care available to more people and earlier diagnosis. But it also makes cancer therapies more effective because they are available earlier. That is, you're diagnosing the disease at an earlier time frame. That's one of the major stories of the week. And I want to mention, if you haven't gotten your flu shot, gosh darn it, get your flu shot. It's already early November. You got to get your flu shot. Get it before the flu takes over, because it will ravage you. It's effective this year. And my last story that I want to get to, a study finds your micromanaging boss could be killing you. What do I mean by that? And what does that story mean? Well, the data were that not only does stress bad for you, but when you've got a boss who doesn't allow you decision power, that is, doesn't allow you to do the job the best way you know how, that is, tells you how to do things and won't let you deviate, that causes you increased stress, and that causes you more disease. Those are the top stories of the week, and we also got to my wonderful favorite one, which is the Cleveland Clinic's top 10. Coming around right after my messages and a little break, is Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Oversanitized World with Brett Finley. That's right. Brett Finley will talk to us more about our microbiome, microbiotics, the cutting edge of letting your kid eat dirt, and why a zoo trip is a great thing. At least my wife, who's a pediatrician, says it's one of the best things you can do. This is Podcast 813. Brett Finley, F-I-N-L-A-Y, and Claire Arrieta, A-R-R-I-E-T-A, have written this incredibly wonderful book, Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Oversanitized World. We'll be right back. I am ready. Now, I have 20 minutes with him. Is that right? Yep, 4 to 4:20. Okay, I am ready for Dr. Finley. Welcome back. This is you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, and we have a spectacular guest for you, at least if I can judge by the book he has written, Let Them Eat Dirt, with a co-author, Mary Claire Arrieta. Dr. Finley, F-I-N-L-A-Y, is a PhD and talks about saving your child from an oversanitized world. Let Them Eat Dirt. It is a magnificent book. Dr. Finley, thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Tell me how you got the idea for the book, Let Them Eat Dirt. Would you have written it if we hadn't have had dirt for kids to eat?
Well, the title's slightly misleading. I'm not saying shovel dirt in your kids, but it all came about from science we were doing in our own lab, where we realized that really early life microbes, even 3 months of age in a baby, seem to influence asthma, which happens, you know, age 3 to 5. And I was going to these other scientific meetings when everyone else was showing food allergies, obesity, all seems to be shaped by the very, very early microbes that kids get. And so Claire is a young mother, and she, the co-author, and her friends were asking her, you know, what should I do? What should I do? Do I use hand sanitizer? And so, frankly, we were basically drinking beer one night talking about science, and Claire said, well, we should write a book. And being a scientist, I've written a lot of papers, but a book is another matter. That's a lot of work. But we thought about it for a while. We thought there was a real need for it, and there's nothing else out there. So basically, she started at the beginning, I started at the end, and we worked, met in the middle and edited and everything, and there we have the book.
Well, it's pretty darn good. I should tell you that as someone who has written, I've written, whatever it is, 14 books and 4 number one bestsellers and 8 other bestsellers, people don't realize that writing a book is a lot of work, but it's usually a labor of love, because you've got a mission, as you did, which is of telling people the value of the bacteria. But in fact, what you're doing now, I consider the majority of the work. I think of the writing a book as 17% of it is writing it, but 80% of the writing a book and getting the message out is the publicity. So I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, because what you're doing is that, some of that really tough 80%.
Well, I mean, frankly, I'm on a mission. I think we need to change society. And so, I agree. The writing the book is one thing, but I now realize we got to get the word out, because we are affecting our kids' health and their misguided conceptions. So, yeah, thank you for having me on this show.
Thank you. I'm going to go and talk a little bit about the number one technology change in medicine that will make a difference to clinical care this next year, the Cleveland Clinic physicians predicted, would be the microbiome for 2017. I know we're a little early. It's still 2016 at the end. But do you think that's true?
Yeah, I working in the field, I still believe it's still being underestimated. It is a lot of hype, I agree, but so I'm thinking of writing another one on healthy aging. And so what I did is I took the top 10 list of what kills Americans, and first glance, there's only one that seems microbial, that's influenza and pneumonia. But when you actually look at all the others, 9 out of those 10 reasons that people die, there's a microbial link to them.
And so microbial link to 9 out of 10, and obviously heart disease and stroke is the inflammation from bacteria.
Alzheimer's, dementia, there's strong links coming with the microbes in the brain, and depression, which links to suicide, seems to be a huge microbial component. The only one I couldn't officially say are accidents, so I don't think we can say the microbes made me do it, and suicide. Suicide, you've got depression being involved there. So yeah, when you go through the list carefully, you know, COPD, lung disease, so I think it really is a major revolution in medicine, and all these fields are now realizing these microbes are actually involved in it.
And so the question came in on the email line. We talked, we tweeted. You can get it at Dr. Mike Roizen, at Dr. Mike Roizen, Facebook or LinkedIn, fine too. But we tweet every week what the guest is going to be. And Brett, one of the people came in and said, when they saw the topic, let them eat dirt, they said, why don't we just give everyone an antibiotic and stop the microbes, and then we'll be all healthier so there won't be inflammation after the bacteria. What's the answer to that?
Oh, no offense to the listener, but I think we now realize that is not a good idea. So antibiotics are drugs that kill microbes. And these things have done a wonderful job in medicine. They've saved millions of lives from lives that are being threatened due to bacterial infection. But the way the antibiotics work is they don't selectively kill one microbe or another. They kill all microbes equally well. And so we now realize that taking antibiotics, you're carpet bombing the microbes. Yes, you get the bad ones, but you kill the good ones off too. And so study after study is coming out showing that increased antibiotic use in the first year of life affects asthma, it affects allergies, it affects obesity, and even later in life, there's studies coming out that basically increased antibiotic use increases depression, stress, anxiety type things. And so the reason that that's not a good idea is that we know we need these microbes. Basically, you have to have microbes to live. That experiment's been done a few times now, and microbes make essential vitamins and other things. You need microbes to live, but you also need them to develop normally. And we as a species have evolved with these microbes, and if you deprive us of those early in life, and well, any time during life, basically things go off the rail. And so with respect to antibiotics, I think the message is use them if it's appropriate. If you have a serious bacterial infection that is antibiotic susceptible, then you take antibiotics. But do not take antibiotics for things like, you know, viral cold infection, because they don't work against viruses. And what is happening now is that previously we knew about antibiotic resistance, but what we didn't really appreciate, the idea thought was, well, antibiotics, at worst, they're not going to harm anything. You know, they're safe and they might not work, but they're not going to hurt anything. And now I think we have to rethink that statement, because we know that antibiotic use actually does jeopardize the microbes, which then jeopardizes your health longer term.
So let's antibiotics, first define, we need to rethink. Let's first define what a microbe is.
Yeah, so a microbe is basically a life form you can't see except under a microscope. So this includes bacteria, and that's, you know, the E. coli, the Salmonella, all the ones you hear about, and that's what we address the most in the book, because that's the ones we know most about. It also includes things like fungi, and also includes the really tiny viruses. But for most studies, when we talk about microbiome and microbiota, most of these studies are currently dealing with bacteria, because we have the handles to actually address these. We don't have good handles on the viruses yet, nor the eukaryotic ones.
And how much is related to microbes inside you, that is gut, as opposed to ones that are on you or that are on your hands when you touch your food?
Right, right. Well, basically the rule with the microbes is that any body surface that's exposed to the environment has microbes on them. That includes your skin, your scalp, your armpits, genital areas, whatever. It also includes the eyes. It also includes the upper respiratory tract. What we tend to think of our gut inside us, but actually when you think physiologically, the gut is just a big tube running from the mouth to the anus. So that's actually external too. And then by far the most number of the microbes live in the lower or the large intestine, way down in the intestine. And their numbers are so huge that, you know, 1 gram of feces contains more microbes than the entire population of humans on this planet. So the numbers are very strong there, but even elsewhere on the body. And what we're realizing is not just gut microbes, but even you know, skin microbes and other microbes on the body, and women's vaginal tract. These things actually play a role in health and disease, too.
Now, my wife says that one of the first things you should do when you take your child out is take them to a zoo. because there's enough difference of bacteria and other things in the zoo. Is that right?
Well, that's all part of this, you know, how do we...
And by the way, she's my wife, so be careful if you say she's
right. No, I'm sure she's a lovely person, and I think she's completely right. All wives
Thank
always
you.
Are. No, so I think that that's all part of this whole environmental exposure to microbes. So zoos, there's a lot of studies coming out also that living on farms, for example, kids have less asthma and obesity and allergies because of the increased microbial exposure to these things. I think a bigger question to think about is that if you believe this whole concept, you know, as we clean up our society and people go more and more urban life, you know, how does a kid living on the 22nd floor of a condominium in urban wherever, pick your favorite city, who really doesn't get out and dirty and you know, these things, where do they get their microbes? Because each generation we get cleaner and cleaner, and nobody has an answer to this. But yes, I think zoo trips certainly, and you know, and also let the kids be kids. They will put sticks, rocks, whatever in their mouth, and as long as there's no potential, you know, infectious danger, which there usually isn't, you know, they'll put a stick in their mouth once and realize it doesn't taste very good, and they won't do it again. But they'll get those microbes there, sort of environmental exposure.
Now, another thing you said at least as I remember reading, that's what I mean by you said in the book was. That if the child's binky falls on the floor, you should wash it off with your own mouth.
Right. So I actually found a study
that
well, in Canada we call them soothers, but the same idea, the thing is stick in the kid's mouth. So I actually found an interesting study where they basically looked at parents who either went and washed the binky off, you know, with water in a washroom and put it back in the kid's mouth, or they just shoveled it in their own mouth and stuck it in the kid's mouth. And the parents that put it in their own mouth, that simple act actually reduced these kids' incidence of asthma, allergy, and obesity, which are all related to the microbes, just by doing that, because you were then introducing more of the parental microbes into the kid instead of washing them all off.
Now, is there any thought that the increased bacteria, let me go and preface it another way. As I understand it, as we get older, we lose the diversity, that is, the number of different strains of bacteria we have inside us. Is there any thought that you could repopulate that? That is, we could all take a variety of different bacteria in a pill form or capsule, and live longer, or why is it that the diversity goes down as we age?
So that's very true. I mean, when you start out in life, your microbes aren't very diverse. By about age 2 or 3, they get quite diverse, and that lasts through childhood. Then you go through puberty, and then you get your adult microbes, and that basically will last you your whole life unless you do something drastic like move or become a vegetarian. But post-65, we see a major decrease in, as you say, the diversity of these microbes, and they really do trend more towards what we think is sort of an unhealthy collection of microbes. And nobody knows the answer to this question yet. I think we have established that microbes, their diversity does decrease with age, but I think your Fountain of Youth question, you know, could we, you know, take something that might increase, you know, part of it is diet. I mean, the diet in elder care homes is atrocious from a microbial point of view. I mean, you should be eating, you know, plant fiber and nuts and legumes and the high fiber components, not white bread and white flour and white sugar type things, because these don't feed the microbes. They're absorbed before they ever get to the microbes. So there's a lot of studies going into this right now. The answer is still not necessarily out there, but as I said before, so many aging problems are being associated with microbes. Even things like frailty, you know, as you get older, your bones decrease in their mass, become frail. Well, it turns out there's this gut-bone axis that these microbes affect calcium absorption in the body, which then affects bone mass. And there's some thought that microbes can affect how frail your bone gets. So if you could figure out the right microbes...
Which bacteria do we take to get increased calcium absorption?
Well, they're still arguing about that. What the whole frustration of this field is, it's still very new, and we can't say, here are 10 microbes you need to take to do this, and another 10 to do that, and another 10 to do that. So it's still a rapidly moving science field, and unfortunately, we don't have the perfect mix. I think what we will see is the generation of these kind of microbes that you could take. Like, you know, there's this one called Lactobacillus plantarum that actually decreases wrinkles. So if you care about skin wrinkles, there's a lot of studies showing that one actually can decrease skin wrinkles. So we're going to see a whole world of new probiotic-like microbes that and I think the way our world is going to be is that you will have your microbiome tested, and you can do that now for $100, and it'll say you have these microbes and not these others. But then you'll be able to do something about it. Say, well, I'm missing these, so you should be able to take, you know, these microbial supplements as such to then repopulate them. But unfortunately, the science isn't good enough to say that yet.
So another question came in on the email because of the tweet in advance. We do tweet at Dr. Mike Roizen, Dr. Mike, DrMikeRoizen. Dr. Mike Roizen, and Facebook and LinkedIn as well. But the question came in when we told people that you were going to be on the show. They said, what does he do to influence his microbiome? And what does she do? And what are the common things the two co-authors do?
So first of all, in the book, at each chapter, we sort of got a do's and don't to-do list that allow sort of tells parents how you can do what's best from your child's microbe point of view. In terms of me personally, after reading this book, I've certainly changed the way I live. I've certainly decreased red meat I eat. I've always exercised quite a bit. And there's good studies showing how exercise affects microbes. I have taken to eating more foods that I think are friendly for the microbiome. So that includes, a lot of fiber, a lot of plant stuff, nuts. People always ask about probiotics. I usually throw some high fiber stuff in my cereal once in a while, but I don't take probiotics. And I think that's because we haven't figured out the right bugs yet. On our website, letthemeatdirt.com, we actually put a link to all the clinical controlled trial studies that we've done with probiotics. So if people want to see which probiotics work according to Western medicine for what ailment, I think there's some really nice studies coming out showing that some will work for some, but not others. Because it's a very confusing area right now. So I just try
and the two times we should say, since we say it commonly on the show, the two times that probiotics have been shown to be effective or important after you've taken an antibiotic to repopulate yourself, and the other is at the end of pregnancy and during breastfeeding.
Right, and there are others. There's some interesting probiotic studies come out on colic, for example, and those are definitely the two of the most common ones. Post C-section, there's some studies showing out that probiotics help recolonize the kid to some extent. But the problem is that they're not regulated like drugs, so that people tend to claim, because they don't have to prove, their claims to the FDA, they tend to claim all sorts of things. So it really is a bit of a health food supplement type issue where, you really aren't sure which one does what. So that's why we put that big link on our website so that people can go and say, here's a, controlled clinical trial that said probiotics work for this. And you're right, post-antibiotics is a very good, very good place for that, as well as early in life. And throughout the book, we discuss which probiotics for what as a science is actually merited it.
And so what I take it is you've changed to eat foods that select for, that are favorable to a healthy bacteria, healthy intestine, and you do that with both eating more plant foods, less, red meat, and you do it with eating foods with fiber in it. And the question came, do you wash your food as well now as you used to? And if not, how do you avoid the serious bacteria that cause foodborne illnesses?
So I spent my entire scientific career up until about 5 years ago studying bacteria that cause infection, foodborne infection. So this is Salmonella, this is E. coli 0157, and that is what I'm known for as a scientist. And so in terms of my own, what I do is I was born and raised on an acreage. My parents were naturalists. I was a free-range kid in a sense. So I tend to be pretty soft in the washing things unless there's some hygiene risk. So, for example, when you're eating ground beef, for example, preparing hamburger patties, that has no 157 E. coli risk. So I'm very careful with that. Same as salmonella, you know, cutting raw chicken on a cutting board, and you don't, you know, cut your salad on that same board without really washing it well. This all gets back to the hygiene versus the sort of environmental exposure balance. And but you know, most things, you know, I grow a lot of my own produce and things, and you know what, you know, dirty carrots, they're fine, right? You know, the chance of getting infection is pretty much zero eating that. Another thing we tend to forget is that
eat dirty carrots.
Well, of course, when you pull out of the garden, what are you going to do? You just scrape a little dirt off, get most of it off. I mean, it's fine, right? You know, the idea that polish it down and sanitize it, there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, like I say, think how our ancestors lived. You know, they didn't have access to chlorinated water, and they didn't have access to all the hygiene.
But they didn't live very long either.
Well, that was mainly infections that were killing them off. And I think that's the whole, you know, if you get infections out of the equation, but you can still have these other things, I think that there's, you know, there's a balance to be had that we're just way too clean in terms of. And getting back to diet, I think that's a very important point to make, that, you know, nothing changes your microbes more than what you eat. I mean, they are really a reflection. You know, the expression is you are what you eat. I would argue your microbes are what you eat, because most of what you eat, you actually don't break down, especially the complex plant things and fibers. And we actually don't bother encoding the proteins and enzymes that would break them down, because we know we'll have microbes in our gut that'll do that. And so I think, you know, you're kind of feeding them. And all this Western, you know, highly processed, you know, white sugar and flour and fat, these are absorbed very quickly in the small intestine, and these substances don't even get down to where the microbes are in the large intestine. So even though you're full, you're actually starving your microbes, and there's a lot of thought that this actually does contribute to obesity and the large weight gain in people over the years. And, you know, as we've gone to this diet, which is very, not very friendly from the microbes' point of view.
Let me ask the final question, if I can. When you wrote the book Let Them Eat Dirt, Saving Your Child from an Oversanitized World, this is with Brett Finley and Mary Claire Arrieta, and it's, by the way, it's a wonderful, wonderful book, and you put in a lot of great information, but when you wrote the book, what was the one thing you learned from Claire Arrieta, Arrieta, your co-author, that surprised you most?
I think it has to be breast milk. So Claire did the first crack at that chapter, and what I didn't realize is there were actually microbes in breast milk. Everyone thinks breast milk is sterile. That's not. And these microbes are key for helping the baby break down it. And then also the components of breast milk, much of what's in breast milk, a baby can't digest. It's actually the microbes that digest it. And this is the these are the microbes that the mother does on the very first birthday present of that kid. When the kid is born, they get vaginal fecal microbes, complements of the mother, and these things are actually critical for breaking down the components of breast milk. And I honestly didn't know that. I thought breast milk was sterile, and I assumed that it's just the nutrients for the kid, and I didn't realize you had to have all these microbes to basically feed the microbes to feed the kid. That was probably the most stunning thing I learned.
I want to thank you very much. Brett Finley and Mary Claire Arrieta have written a great book, Let Them Eat Dirt. It really is a fun book to read, has lots of interesting information, and especially if you're looking for a gift that is unusual for a new parent or about to be parent, this is a great, unusual book. It's from Workman Publishing, printed in the United States. Is there a website on it, Brett?
Yeah, it's called letthemeatdirt.com. You can find not only how to buy the book, but more importantly, I've put up a lot of information there just for parenting that can, you know, just help parents, you know, just all the common questions and what do I do when in terms of, you know, sterilizing your bottles. So I'd refer you to that. It's a very good resource.
letthemeatdirt.com. Thanks very much. We'll be right back next week with a new podcast. This is Podcast 813, You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show at Radio MD and iHeartRadio and other ways to do it. Read us, enjoy it. Get this. If you want to subscribe, you can ask us questions at udocs, Y-O-U-D-O-C-S, at gmail.com, Y-O-U-D-O-C-S, at gmail.com. You can subscribe. If you just put subscribe in the newsletter, in the subject line, sorry, we will send you a newsletter about the show, usually the day of the show. That is the day we release it, which is Tuesdays at 7 a.m. Eastern. And we'll be coming back with tremendous, we have two tremendous guests for 8:14 and 8:15 coming up in the next 2 weeks. But in the meantime, letthemeatdirt.com is a wonderful book as a present. And you can find all the information at Radio MD, all 813 prior shows or podcasts. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to Sonar for great engineering. And remember, stay well.
Okay.
Thank you, Sonar.
Good. Yeah, fun.
Thank you.